Thank you very much. It's such a pleasure to be here, and particularly, I was here once before. I did speak here once before, but it was to the students, and I enjoyed that visit very much. And it's really a special privilege whenever I get an opportunity to have a shmooze with mechanchim, with people who dedicate their lives to educating our children, which is the most important job in the entire world. And it's much of my job is trying to identify those who would be good at this and encourage people to go into education and to go into chinuch. That's a lot of what I do in yeshiva. So to be able to talk to people who are in the field, who are working with children, are encouraging children, are building children, is a really, really special privilege and one that I don't take lightly. And I thank you all for having me with you this morning. Now, having said all of that, my personal experience in chinuch was always at the high school level and older. I spent 18 years teaching in high school, and then I moved on to teach at the college level, and now I'm teaching in the post-college level in the smicha program. So my entire experience with elementary and middle school age children are with my own children. I can only imagine, I know how challenging it was to learn with my children when they were at that age, which I tried very hard to make an effort to learn with each of my children at that age. I can only imagine what it would be like with like 20 of them or 25 of them in front of me at one time. So I can't really speak from any sense of expertise about the specific tasks that you do on a day-to-day basis, and obviously you are far greater experts than I am, probably on many things, but certainly on that level. So I thought maybe we'd zoom out a little bit and talk more bigger picture attitudinally toward education. And I'm going to share with you some ideas that I've heard from my own teachers, from my own rebbeim, that have made an impact on me and just the way I view the entire area of chinuch. And at any point, any questions, any comments, anything you think I'm off base on, please feel free to speak up. I have no, like I said, I don't know anything. Certainly not about the challenges in your community, in your school, that the challenges and the triumphs and the great rewards that you live through on a daily basis. I did speak recently to a group of teachers from Kushner, which is a school in New Jersey, named after the Kushner family, and the teachers wanted to know they were focused on a few issues. Two things in particular that they wanted to know was, first of all, how to handle teaching things when certain children come from homes that maybe don't observe all of those things that you're teaching. Meaning they're going to be teaching about Shabbos, and many of the kids come from homes that maybe aren't fully Shomer Shabbos or aren't Shomer Shabbos at all. So what are you telling the children? Are you telling the children that your parents are all wrong and that you're better than them and you know more than them? What exactly is the tone? That was one thing that the teachers were interested in over there. Another area that they were interested in discussing was just how to measure success, which is also interesting, because very often in our field, in the field of chinuch, success does not appear on the spot. It comes much, much later. I will tell you, just to give you some perspective, over the summer, I spent the summer at Camp Cayley. I spent 1 month of the summer at Camp Cayley, which is a wonderful camp if you don't know about it, you can learn more about it, but it's a very fascinating camp with a very very interesting and beautiful mission. But I spend time with boys who are 19 years old, 20 years old, and are learning all day long. The most serious, really wonderful B'nai Torah one could imagine. And we get to choose, because we only have 20 slots in our program, and all the boys that age want to join that program. So we really get the cream of the crop, the best of the best. And typically, at one point in the summer, I'll go around the room and I'll just say, tell me who's had the greatest impact on your life, like outside of family, outside of your parents. Obviously, your parents have had the greatest impact on your life, but outside of your parents, what person has had the greatest impact on your life? And like, if there's a moment that you could identify. And I was expecting every single one of these boys who had just come back from their first year in Shalavim or Yeshiva HaKotel to identify the Rebbe that they had that year who, caused them to learn an extra 10 minutes in the Beis Medrash or something. And I cannot tell you how many of them identified an elementary school or a middle school teacher or Rebbe that had an impact on them. And I don't know that those teachers or Rebbeim are even aware of the impact that they had on these children. And this is years later, as these are rising stars in the Jewish community, and they are that's who they think of when forced to take a moment, take a step back, and think about who's had a major impact on them. And that should be a great source of chizik. Now, having said that, there are these challenges of how to measure that success, and one way to know that you can measure the success is by keeping in touch. And it's perhaps challenging as the years go on. I know certainly after 18 years of teaching in high school, it's difficult to remember all the names, let alone to know what everybody is up to and where everybody is. Perhaps a little bit easier when everybody lives in the same community, which is probably not the case over here. I imagine you have students that come from outside of Boca as well. But to the extent possible, there's a wonderful Rebbe in DRS High School, which is where I taught for all those years, the name of Rabbi David Willig. And my sons all went through DRS. My fourth son is in Rabbi Willig Shir now. And my oldest son, who just became a father, still gets phone calls periodically from Rabbi David Willig. And it's just, it's an incredible, I don't know how he has time for it. I don't know how he, but they feel this incredible connection to him because he stays in touch, because they know that it's not just a one-year relationship. Now, I remember my third grade teacher is someone who my fifth grade teacher is someone who I see all the time. And she follows what I'm up to, and every time I see her, oh, I saw you posted a shiur on this, I saw you spoke here, she's following my career, and like we feel this tremendous connection. We don't sit and schmooze so much, we don't sit and talk all that much, but it brings back such warm feelings to know that I had a very successful year in fifth grade, not so much in fourth grade, but very successful in fifth grade, not so much in sixth grade, but for whatever reason, we connected, and this teacher just inspired me. And everyone, a teacher, student, sometimes it's a shidduch, and sometimes it has to be the right fit, but you're able to tap into something, and you deserve the nachas of being able to watch as the students develop, and especially as you lay the groundwork. Now, I want to talk about something that I think does relate a lot to young children and to educating young children. We have a crisis. I don't know, maybe crisis is a little overdramatic, but there is certainly an issue in the Orthodox community, in America in general, an emuna issue, an issue of belief in God. There are a lot of people, adults who are spending their lives observing Shabbos, observing kosher, spending tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars sending their kids to yeshiva, who simply don't believe in God, who simply don't have a relationship with Hashem. And, when you speak to people who know a little bit about building emuna, about a sense of building that warmth with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that sense of connection with God, everyone will tell you it has to start at the youngest of ages. And that has to be the foundation. So I want to share with you three ideas in building emuna that I heard just this week from Great Gadol, one of the great Torah sages in America today, Rav Aaron Lapiansky from Greater Washington. And Rav Lapiansky happens to be an expert in this area and many, many other areas. And he shared with us three basic ideas, not basic, but three ideas. And I want to share them with you this morning with your permission. He quoted Rav Hirsch, Rav Sham Shrafal Hirsch. And then he said, truth is, I heard it 30 years ago, or he said, I saw it 30, 40 years ago, and I haven't been able to track it down. So I think it's Rav Hirsch, but I'm not 100% sure that it was Rav Hirsch. But he said, perhaps Rav Hirsch said the following. Rav Hirsch was dealing with the problem of how to deal with evolution. Okay, this was an issue that nowadays people aren't so bothered by that question. But I had to deal with the Torah account of creation. When you have the theory of evolution, that seems to fly in the face of the Torah account of creation. And in dealing with that question, with the questions that evolution poses, he deals with the fact specifically that the Torah says that the world is under 6,000 years old, and there are trees that have 10,000 rings. Right? So, like, what do you do with that? So, if we don't talk about it at all, and a child is raised, let's say, in a very insular, secluded, you know, community where he's never going to hear about evolution and he's never going to learn about it, he's never going to interact, you know, that's fine. He'll be happy and he'll be a ma'amin, he'll believe in God and he'll believe in everything the Torah says, and he's never going to have any questions because nothing's ever, for the most part, until he, you know, discovers the internet one day, right? Meaning, but for the most part, you could have someone in such an insular community, if he's exposed to it and it was never spoken about, then he's probably going to be shocked out of his mind, and it's going to shake his emunah. And that's what happens very often, that people are exposed to ideas that they never heard of before. They don't have the tools with which to deal with those ideas, and it shocks them, and it often has a major impact on the emunah. If you ask the questions and then try to give answers, meaning when you're teaching basic science and you ask a question and try to give answers, or you're teaching Bria, you're teaching Bereshis Bara Elokim, they say, oh, by the way, there are dinosaur bones that we know that are billions of years old. But the Torah says, oh, but the answer is, you know, when you ask the question, try to give answers. The way questions and answers always feel, the answers always feel artificial. It always feels that the answer is never as good as the question. Questions sometimes are so bothersome to us, meaning if a question is asked properly, that we always feel like, all right, it's a teretz. The Odi Shlomar, right? Is there another teretz? Because, you know, that answer doesn't resonate. And we start judging it by the answer. It's like Rav Lapiansky gave the mashal. He says, it's like you have a patient who's bleeding all over, and you have a box of bandages, and you say, see that? He's healthy. I got a box of bandages. And, a person who's got bandages all over doesn't look super healthy. He doesn't look all that great. And you have all these questions on emunah to deal with the questions and then answer the questions. Also very challenging. So you're really in a pickle. Like, what are you supposed to do? How do you build emunah if you can't? You can't keep children completely cut off from the rest of the world, nor do we want to, by the way. I imagine that's not the hashkafa of this school. It's generally not a great recipe for success in the world of the internet. And you can't ignore it totally, because then one day they're going to have questions and not going to have answers, and you can't ask them questions and answer them, because then every teretz seems like it's something that's dachuk. It seems like it's something that that someone just tried to come up with to patch up an old belief. So Hirsch explains as follows. He says he would ask children, when Hashem created the world, do you think he created the world as a blank, like a blank canvas, and he just started fresh? Or do you think he created a world that was already ready? Meaning a world that, like, when he created it, it was already going, it was already functioning. Like, was every tree planted at that first week of creation? Or did he just put trees in the world? Like, what do you think? And have a class discussion about it, Reverse says. And the kids could debate, well, this, that. He says, well, you know, there are trees that have 10,000 rings. And God created the world 5,000 years ago. Like, we go, oh, okay, so then that's a raya that Hashem created an already ready world, that Hashem created a world that was already functioning. Meaning, if you start with the given, that God created the world, and that is a given, and you start with, and I'm not getting into the specifics of age of the universe and whether one must believe or, exactly how it played out. I can't deal with such high-level issues. I'm speaking in general, that if you start with the given, then you're not going to have to come to a Q&A where it almost is always perceived as apologetics. When you want to reinforce emunah, you want to present the MS and how you see it around you rather than presenting questions. So you present the truth, and then all the questions are going to become the rayas, are going to become the proofs to what the truth is. So it's always wiser to start with the foundations and build it organically around those foundations. And the way children think, you know, Rav Rosenzweig, one of the great Rosh Yeshiva in our yeshiva, Yeshiva University, was once talking about how to choose a school for your child. This goes back decades already. When I was choosing a school for my children, I was listening to this lecture, trying to see if I would gain any insight. And he said something that I thought was really spectacular. He said, whatever school a parent chooses for their child is not going to be a perfect fit. Because every family is different, every child is different, and you can only have so many schools. You can't have a different school for every child. There's not going to be a school that fits every single one of your values, that's exactly as Zionistic as you are, but not more and not less, and that believes in secular studies to this extent and not to that extent, that has this attitude about pursuing a degree in a secular college versus Yeshiva University or versus Lakewood or whatever. I mean, you're not going to find a school that fits exactly your value system. And what Rosenzweig suggested is that it's important that a parent think about what I can supplement at home and what I can't. Right? Meaning there are certain things that can be supplemented at home. A basic lack of Derech Eretz can't be supplemented at home. You're never going to be able to compensate for 10 hours of the wild, wild west, if that's what the school experience is like, by trying to keep control at home. It's just, it won't work. The children are going to be used to just total hefker, total, you know, lawlessness. You can't supplement that. And he suggested that one thing that one cannot supplement at home, meaning you can try, but it's never going to fully work, is an overall sense of Yiras Shamayim, an overall sense of a connection to God, an overall sense that someone who is more connected to God is viewed as a greater success. Is viewed as, meaning, I would often tell parents, go to a school and see if being the firmest kid in the class necessarily means you're the biggest nerd in the class, or does it perhaps give you a leg up? Does it perhaps make you someone that the other kids admire? And you can tell a lot about the culture of a school that way. Meaning, some schools, the kid that memorized all these Mishnayos Palperes, something the other kids idolize him. He's amazing. And some schools, like, what's wrong with that kid? Well, why is he doing that? You know, that's so stupid. And what's the overall attitude? The overall attitude of Yiras Shamayim. And that's a culture thing. That's something that has to be built. And when that's built, when that kernel of Yiras Shamayim, that kernel of Emunah Hashem, of a relationship with Hashem is built, then everything else fits around that. And an educational institution has the ability, at every level, has the ability to shape the way people think. Rav Lapiansky told us that when he went to high school, he was in a school called RJJ. And he said, back in the day, the way it worked was that the really from kids went to Tar Vadas, and the kids who believed more in secular, he said, in Tar Vadas, secular studies didn't mean anything, and Torah meant everything. In MTA, he said, this is the way kids perceived it. He said, secular studies meant everything and Torah meant nothing. And in RJJ, they either both meant everything or they both meant nothing, depending on your perspective, right? Meaning, so he said he was in the middle of the road school. He was in RJJ. And he said, like, he had a teacher, a 12th grade teacher, who was very bright, very secular, and very anti-religious. I happened to have been a teacher in the school at that time. And he said the teacher, he was an amazing teacher. And Rav Lapiansky was a brilliant Talmud. He didn't say that, but that's obvious, right? He was a brilliant, brilliant student. And the teacher loved him. The teacher took a real liking to him. And Rav Lapiansky was like the only kid in RJJ that already in 11th grade, he decided that he's going to pursue a path of learning Torah full-time, which was not at all the path that his classmates were going to pursue. And he had some encouragement from the mashkiach of the yeshiva, was telling him, don't go to college, you should stay in learning. Happens to be, if you listen to Rav Lapiansky speak now, it's amazing what he knows about the world, about history, about physics, about chemistry, about, because you can, if a person is intelligent enough, say he's self-educated, and it was important to him to educate himself. So for whatever reason, that was what his decision was, that he was not going to go to college. And this teacher found out that he was not going to go to college, that Aaron Lapiansky was not going to go to college, that this brilliant mind. And he said to the boys, he said, look, what's the reason that you should go to college? Right? What's the reason that they should go to college? So he gave him a shmuz. You don't have to go to make money. You can make money other ways. You don't have to go because you can have a fancy piece of paper on the wall. You know, the fancy piece of paper on the wall can come other ways. The reason you go to college is because you're going to see the world differently than you saw it before. You're going to see the world differently than you saw it before. And Flavianski said, that's exactly what the Mashkiach said, right? It's exactly why he told me not to go. But whether for good, for bad, or otherwise, that's ultimately what education does. Right? Meaning, obviously, there are certain foundations that many people in this room build that are actual skills that are going to be used on a daily basis. How to read, how to write, how to do basic arithmetic. There are certain things that will stick forever. But for the most part, the goal of education is to be able to see and interpret the world in a different way. And therefore, the overarching goal of schools, of Jewish schools, should be to see the world through the lens of the Ribbono Shel Olam, to see the world through the lens of a relationship with Hashem. And then the 10,000 rings on the tree aren't going to bother me as much, because that's going to be a raya to one side of my question of whether Hashem created a ready-made world or he created a world from scratch. Because the whole world is interpreted through that lens. You know, a lot of times Rabbanim struggle with exactly what they're meant to accomplish in a shul. I was talking to a rabbi actually from Boca, not Rabbi Goldberg, but a rabbi from one of the other communities here in Boca. And we were talking about, like, what's the purpose of a rabbi's drasha? Like, why does a rabbi give a drasha on Shabbos morning? So, for some people to catch up on their sleep, whatever, okay, fine, he has to. So this young rabbi said to me, I think it's just, you know, it's just so you can say values, you can share things that you're thinking about, so that you can sort of, like, set the agenda of what's worth thinking about. I thought that there should be a lot more. I happen to disagree that that's the entire goal, but I'm not talking to Rabbanim now. I think that it's very different. I think there could be much more practical do-nows that can be suggested in just about every single drasha that will change people's lives. In fact, there was a group from Boca that went to New York last year, a group of men, to visit different gedolim, different great rabbis. And I told Rabbi Goldberg, you got to go to Rabbi Yisrael Reisman. He's out of this world. He's an amazing Talmud Chacham. None of the people probably ever had any access to him. And Rabbi Goldberg said, okay, so make the connection. So I did, and they went. And then I texted Rabbi Goldberg, knew, how was it? He said, it was great. I said, send me the recording. He sent me the recording. And that recording, Rabbi Reisman said, look, I don't know you guys, but I'm going to tell you, I struggle with tefillah. So here's an etzah that I use to help me with my kavanah during davening. From listening to that recording, it's changed my tefillah entirely. So this is before Purim. Prior to that, excuse me, I don't remember the last time I can say that three Shemone Esrei's a day, that I had perfect kavanah in Shemone Esrei. Once I heard that, thank you very much. It will take a while to say thank you. So prior to that, and then since then, I haven't gone a single Shemone Esrei without having perfect Kavanah throughout the first Bracha Shemone Esrei. I wouldn't say not a single. I could definitely count on one hand the amount of Shemone Esrei I've davened since then. There is power to suggestion. I can't tell you how many things. I had a sixth grade Rebbe, who it used to be the minhag in our elementary school, is when a boy would put on tefillin for the first time, he would go around with donuts and orange juice, and at that time it was schnapps. They would not allow that nowadays, but this is going back years. And with a cart, and you'd go around to all the Rebbeim, so each of the Rebbeim, and the kids loved it because it was an interruption to middle class, right? So the kids loved it. So this sixth grade Rebbe, I remember seeing this parade of seventh and eighth graders coming through day after day with a donut and a l'chaim. It was crazy. You think about it, it's like, I can't believe that happened. But and this sixth grade Rebbe would say to each boy, and I strongly recommend that you never talk in your tefillin. You should never talk in your tefillin. I cannot tell you how many boys that went through, not because they got the bracha when they put on tefillin, but because they were sitting in that sixth grade classroom listening to that Rebbe, to Rabbi Krieger, tell everybody not to talk in their tefillin. How many boys didn't talk in their tefillin? I personally didn't talk in my tefillin for my bar mitzvah until I became a Rebbe and I had to talk to the Talmidim to guide them. I had to do Ataras Nadarim. It's an amazing the power of suggestion that you have to just suggest. But I don't want to focus on that. Meaning Rav Lapiansky focused. There is something, there's value to talking about things even if students are not there yet in terms of practical observance, in terms of understanding exactly the import of that. You know, for example, a child grows up, let's say, and he goes to he or she goes to Israel and they have a very positive experience and they're wowed by their rebbeim or seminary teachers. And they decide that they want to pursue a career in education. They want to be a teacher. They want to be a rabbi. They're going to go home to their parents and they're going to say, I decided this is what I want to do with my life. Right? So what's the parents' reaction going to be? So very often within our community, the reaction is, okay, you need to calm down a little bit. You know, we'll get realistic later. Meaning, but maybe if we're constantly talking about not ourselves, but each other, the respect we have for the other teachers in the school, the respect we have for the rebbeim in the school, the respect we have for legendary teachers and rabbis. And there are people that have done great things, and to tell those stories, tell it to adults, tell it to children. So when that idea crosses the mind, it's not going to be like, yeah, but that's, you know, I'm supposed to be an investment banker. I'm not supposed to do that. When the idea crosses the mind, it's like, oh, I might be able to be better than an investment banker. I might be able to do something even more meaningful than making rich people richer. I might be able to impact neshamos and lives and have that sense of fulfillment each and every day. And it just changes the value system. And we don't see it happen in front of our eyes. But to talk about these things, to talk about them, it really makes a big difference. You know, that's what Rabbi Lapiansky was saying. It's like a shul rabbi gets up and talks about, you know, whatever's happening in politics that week. Is that really going to change the value system of the person? But we talk about the respect we have for Torah, the respect, the love we have for Hashem, the respect we have for Talmidei Chachamim and for Tzadikim and Tzidkanios. That means something. A second idea. I have seven. Okay, so maybe a third idea. Let's skip the second idea. Relating to Emunah, right? 10:30 is the thing. So another idea relating to Emunah. The specific questions are not really what make or break a person's Emunah. Meaning when a person comes and says, look, I want to believe in God, but there are 10,000 rings in the tree. It's not the 10,000 rings in the tree that are really bothering them. That's usually not what the issue is. The way life is going is usually what makes or breaks personal emunah. Meaning, do I feel angry? Do I feel that God has abandoned me? Do I feel that my life is going well? Do I feel happiness in life? And a lot of that is based on expectations and even the stories that we tell. You know, I'll give you an example. Again, this is straight from Rav Lapiansky. Rav Lapiansky told the following story. There was a guy, a kollel younger man in Eretz Yisrael, a guy learning in kollel in Israel. The kollels there pay nothing, right? They get very little. They can't really make ends meet. And he wanted to work as an election worker because it's a good, you know, it's a good parnassah because every 2 months, you know, so he was. They were offering like 2,000 shekel for a day, which is like wild. But then you go wherever they tell you to go. And they were telling him to go to a place that was very not sanua. Whatever, it was not within his value system. Whatever his value system, agreed, disagreed, it's irrelevant. But a place that was not within his value system to be there for a whole day. And he wasn't sure, should I do it, should I not do it? It's 2,000 shekel, I could really use the money. Think of all the Torah that I could learn, but the Shemir is saying Nayim, and what's going to be? And he wasn't sure what to do. And this was written up in like the Hebrew Yatet. And the fellow decided not to go. He decided not to do it. And he said, I was walking through the streets of Yerushalayim, and I realized that I didn't do this. I gave this up, 2,000 shekel. And just at that moment, I found... How does that sentence end? So in every story, it's, I found 2,000 shekel. God threw 2,000 shekel at me. And then there it was. And that's a success. What he actually wrote was, I found what I really value in life. That I was able to tell myself what I stand for, what I'm willing to sacrifice for, and that was powerful for me. To be able to find what I really value in life. Too many of the stories that we tell have happy endings. You know, that things work out because they didn't lose the money in the end. But guess what? That's not what real life is. And when every story that we tell has to have that ending, then when real life actually happens, well, then I'm angry at God. Then I don't get it anymore. I don't understand. Why can he leave me? Now the 10,000 rings in the tree bother me. And there must not be a God. We talk about Hashkacha Pratis and Hashem has a plan and how everything's going to be amazingly good. And we reinforce that with stories. But that's not what Hashkacha Pratis means. It doesn't mean that everything is going to be amazingly good. It's not the right message. There's something deeper that you have to give over. The Ramchal in Derech Hashem describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an end result that he wants from each person in this world. And he directs our lives toward that shleimus, toward that sense of what he wants from us. Everything that we do for our children, for example, when we punish them and when we reward them, is because we are trying to send them in a certain direction. The punishments are also trying to send them in a certain direction. That's what Hashkacha Pratis means. It doesn't mean you're going to find the 2,000 shekel. It means that even when things don't go a certain way, it's guiding you in a certain path and in a certain direction. Hashkacha means that Kadosh Baruch Hu directs us in order that we become changed people. When a person goes through a difficult period, he changes. You know, that's the kind of emuna we have to try to build. To understand that Hashem wants to bring something out in us. You know, it's helpful because it doesn't build false expectations. It gives us a real understanding of life and what life is all about. Rav Lapiansky said that he once knew a family where, unfortunately, a young man... They had a son who had cancer. And he said it was a very, very difficult parsha. It was a very, as you can imagine, the drain on the family, emotionally, financially, everything. And it was, and there were a few friends that were with them throughout the journey. And ultimately, the child succumbed to his illness. And Rav Lapiansky said he spoke to the family sometime later. And he said to them, he said to the father and the mother, he said, I just want you to know that we are different people for having lived through this parsha, even just tangentially. And the father said those are the most comforting words he ever heard. Why are those the most comforting words he ever heard? Are those words going to bring back his child? Are those words going to cure illness? They're comforting because there was a path that Hashem had planned on sending people on, and this challenge was a vehicle through which to send people through that path. To make people become better, to make people stand up, to make people become, draw out their potential. We don't know what exactly Hashem's plan is, and it doesn't always work out the way we would like it to. And those are the stories that really grow a person. You know, we asked Rav Lapiansky, should we make change the message? Rav Moshe Feinstein was famous for saying that a whole generation of Jews were gave up on religion because they grew up hearing their parents say Shvarz Zayin Yid, that it's how difficult it is to be a Jew. Maybe it's too easy now to be a Jew. Maybe we need to bring back a little Shvarz Zayin Yid. Like everything is just like put in our laps. Everything's so easy. As soon as something doesn't go our way because we're so used to having everything, it breaks us because we're so fragile. So he said, no, we shouldn't say Shvarz Zayin Yid. We should teach our children how geschmack it is to have the Shvarz Zayin Yid. Meaning, he said, for example, when he was growing up, he said, if a kid wanted a bicycle, nobody had any money. Right, growing up in the Lower East Side in the 50s, right? No one had any money. So he said, what did you do if you wanted a bicycle? You washed cars, you did whatever you can, you mowed someone's lawn, there were no lawns in the Lower East Side, but whatever, you did whatever you can to make a couple of dollars here, a couple of, then you saved up months and months and months, and you bought a bicycle. Now if a kid wants a bicycle, he goes on his parents' Amazon account, he orders a bicycle and shows up the next day. Who loves their bicycle more? I mean, it's not even close. That going through that process, going through that, that's emunah building. Emunah building is realizing that Hashem runs the world. And for us, and to somehow figure out at age-appropriate levels how to convey that to our children and to our students. So we only got to 2 out of 3 points, but to quickly summarize. Point number one was to build an infrastructure of emunah rather than to debate and question, to build a value system and to realize the results aren't going to be there. Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're immediate. You get that smile on the kid's face when their eyes light up when they get it. You know, they were trying and trying and they didn't get it. And then you see that, and that's like a drug that you wish you could be pumped with every, right? When that's what we're in it for. But sometimes you just see struggle after struggle after struggle, and you're trying. How do I get into this brain, to this heart? How do I? And it takes a long time. But to constantly talk about those values and to constantly build that relationship, because that relationship is going to be something that our students will value for many, many years. And the second point is to just understand the role of Hashem in our lives and to be able to convey that properly. That it's not that the end of the story is always great. To redefine Hashkacha as Hashem bringing us to where He wants us to be, to bring us to our ultimate tikkun. I wish you continued success, Hatzlacha, in educating and inspiring your students, young and younger, to lives full of avodas Hashem and meaning, and they should bring you much nachas.